This is Fresh Air. Aspen, Colorado has become a retreat for the rich and famous. Journalist Ted Conover says it represents a problem in American culture. Very successful and wealthy individuals are virtually seceding from the rest of society. Conover's new book, Whiteout, is based on the 2 years he spent living in Aspen. He worked for a cab company, a caterer, and a local newspaper. He crashed Don Johnson's party, worked on John Denver's Christmas special, joined the health club where Jane Fonda works out, and tried to locate the God within him at New Age therapy groups. Not exactly the lifestyle he was used to. Conover rode the rails with hobos for his earlier book, Rolling Nowhere, and he traveled with illegal immigrants from Mexico for his book, Coyotes. I wondered why he went from writing about the disenfranchised to the wealthy elite.
I thought it would be a good thing for me to look at the other side of the coin. And I also think Aspen is representative of a trend in American culture. It's part of a movement of well-educated, upper-middle-class urbanites, not toward suburbs, which were the lodestone in the 50s and 60s, but toward smaller towns, college towns, and resort towns in particular, because they offer some of the cosmopolitan setting of cities without most of the ills of cities. And in the case of Aspen, this seemed to me to represent a sort of problem in terms of the creation of an elite enclave of people insulated from the world struggle. So I thought Aspen had held out all sorts of possibilities that were very much in line with the sorts of things I had written about before.
It's very expensive to live in Aspen, and a lot of people who live there or who go there are celebrities. And you're right that celebrities first started coming for beauty and charm, and then they started going to take a vacation from being celebrities. Do you think that there's a celebrity class in America, and that the celebrity class likes to be in places where they can hang out with other celebrities in a kind of celebrity-protected environment?
I do, and Aspen's very celebrity-friendly in terms of being full of people who will not come up to you for an autograph if you're Don Johnson, who will not stare at you in the boutique if you're Jane Fonda, just out shopping. You can be a celebrity there, and as far as it seems possible, just be a regular person. I mean, that is possible to some degree in Aspen. The change over the last few years, however, is that before, celebrities really could come to Aspen for a vacation, and now it's sort of another stop on the celebrity circuit, especially in the week between Christmas and New Year's, when there are more than you can shake a stick at, and they're there to be seen, as well as just to enjoy the beauty and the comforts of Aspen.
Is this particularly true of stars who are on their way up or on their way down and need to be seen?
The ones on their way up are the ones who come to be seen. The ones on the way down often are the ones who live there. In a way, you can, it's sort of like you can go out to pasture in Aspen if you're a little past your peak. If you are Jill St. John or John Denver, George Hamilton, someone without all the intense interest that you might have attracted in past years, Aspen's a very pleasant retreat.
This book represents, in a way, a change of class for you. I mean, you're from the middle class.
Right.
But for your first couple of books, you wrote about people who were disenfranchised. You wrote about hobos. You wrote about illegal immigrants from Mexico.
Right.
Suddenly, okay, you're still middle class, but you're writing about people who are really wealthy.
Yes.
And who are, in some instances, celebrities to boot. So now you were the comparatively disenfranchised one.
Right.
Was there a lot of, like, class confusion for you during this period?
Yes, there is. You know, I've always thought of myself as someone to whom issues of social justice and things like that were important. In Aspen, I went with a certain chip on my shoulder, thinking I will approach Aspen from the working class point of view. But to my surprise, the longer I was there, the more I found I really, really liked it. And people were really nice to me. I was a young writer. I mean, unlike with Mexican guys, I fit right in Aspen. And I started enjoying it a great deal. And in fact, had planned to spend only a year, ended up spending 2 years, and could barely leave at the end of that time. And it's a very seductive thing to live in a place with so many comforts, such natural beauty, such a lack of social need. I live in New York City now, and where you're constantly aware of your neighbor's needs. In Aspen, you never are, and there's something so blissful about it. It's so seductive, and I thought the best way to write this book would be to try and be honest about the ways in which I was sort of a little mean-spirited at the start and then got totally swept up in it, and at the very end saw myself doing some sort of unpleasant things and decided it might be time to take a break.
I want to get back a little later to how Aspen seduced you and why you eventually left anyways.
Sure.
First, let me reintroduce you, and my guest is Ted Conover, author of the new book, Whiteout, Lost in Aspen. It's based on the 2 years that he spent living there, and he spent part of that time driving a taxi and part of that time working for a catering company and then part of the time working for the local newspaper. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with writer Ted Conover, whose new book is based on the couple of years that he spent living in Aspen. It's called Whiteout, Lost in Aspen. I want to get back to the idea of Aspen as a place where many celebrities live or go to vacation.
Uh-huh.
One of the most famous names associated with Aspen is John Denver, I mean, who even adopted the name of the state for his own name.
Right.
Now, you very cleverly got to work as an extra on the John Denver Christmas special while you were there. It was called Christmas in Aspen.
That's right.
And then after working away at it for months, he finally granted you an interview. You have described John Denver as a New Age Oral Roberts. And you went to his New Age community, and you also went to a New Age conference
right. That
he sponsored called
right. Choices. Right.
And Choices is supposed to provide a chance to be our better selves.
Right.
You were skeptical about whether you could find out about your better self in such a kind of beautiful, controlled environment like Aspen.
Well, yeah, it's funny. You find that Aspen, in some ways, it's like going to church because while you're there, you know it's not likely anyone's going to do anything real mean to you. I mean, they're not going to cut you off in traffic like happens in a city, or there aren't going to be cross burnings in Aspen. There aren't going to be street people coming up to you at your glass of cappuccino and demanding money. It's that's what I mean when I say it's an easy place to see your better self or to feel your better self emerge.
None of your convictions will be tested in
any
way.
There's an easy liberalism that comes there. And I'll never forget. Can I go and tell this story?
Yeah.
I'll never forget the day I went to hear Jesse Jackson in Aspen, of all things. He spoke in the same ballroom where Don Johnson had his party. And he's hot on the campaign trail, and he scheduled his meeting or his rally for right after the ski lifts closed. So a lot of people came straight over, and here's this ballroom filled with people in ski suits. Some were even still wearing their ski boots. And here's Jesse Jackson with a pre-recorded rally tape saying, from Harlem to Watts, you know, from Detroit to Montgomery, we shall overcome. And everyone's cheering along, and you just think, this is too strange.
Tell me a little bit more what the seminar was like, the Choices seminar.
Windstar assembles a faculty, I guess you could call it, of people who either represent some hopeful strain in American culture or are prominent in the self-improvement and self-actualization movements. And they lecture, and you sit in a big tent, and people testify. It's sort of like a revival. John Denver has a wireless microphone and goes into the audience, and you get to meet him. And when you come to Windstar, it's like coming to Aspen. You get to meet all these people you recognize, and you get to go to a very intimate concert where John Denver sings, and he sounds better than ever. I mean, the guy's voice is great. And yet, at the end of it, you think, is this going to make any difference? And I have great skepticism about that.
What did you find most seductive about Aspen?
I'm 33 years old and unmarried. And in Denver, where I grew up and which was my home base for a long, a long, long time. I was feeling left out of the main flow of life by being 33 and unmarried in Denver. All my friends were getting married, having kids. And up in Aspen, to be in your 30s and unmarried practically means you're at the center of the action because so many other people are in exactly the same boat. So all of a sudden, you feel normative, you know? You feel like, this is just the place for me. And not only that, there's so many attractive people. I mean, it's quite staggering. I remember the day I was in the Aspen Times office with my friend Paul Anderson, who's a reporter there, and we were standing by the front desk where people come in to place their ads and everything. And I was getting to like Aspen enough that I'd bought myself some brightly colored fluorescent bicycling shorts with Nike emblazoned on the side, and I was... Oh, God, I was wearing these sunglasses up on my head. I mean, only in Aspen would a reporter dress this way and get away with it. And there's dogs all around. You can bring your dog to work. And that's so fun to begin with right there. That's seductive. But then a friend of mine who's a ski instructor came in. This woman is so good looking. And she looked at how I was dressed and she said, Aspen's got you, Aspen's got you. I knew it would get you finally. You thought you'd just come to study it, but Aspen has you in its grip. And she was right.
You started to become a little suspicious about how well you were adjusting to Aspen, and I think this especially happened on your trips back to Denver.
Right.
Describe how you'd feel when you'd go back to Denver and suddenly, instead of just being surrounded by wealthy, healthy people, there was homelessness, there was crime, there were people of every, you know, social and economic class.
It was on these return trips home to Denver that I think I realized my better self was no longer emerging in Aspen, because I'd come down to Denver and it would look so plain and dirty, and you have to come in to the city through these industrial districts and the poor side of town, and there's all this air pollution, and I lived on a block in a low-income part of town where...
In Denver.
In Denver, right, where I had my apartment for much of the time I was in Aspen, just because I didn't want to give it up. And I'd get down and I'd be unloading my gear, you know. I'd take my skis off the car, take my mountain bike off the rack, and you look down the street and it was like the only car on the block with a rack on top. And I'd have all this stuff, the parkas, the gloves, the gear. Like, gear is what it's about. And I'd hurry up. I'd have to run to get it inside, because if you leave it outside there where I live, it'll get stolen. And I started to resent that. And I started to resent having to live in a place where you had to be a little bit apologetic about what you owned, or at least be cautious about it. In Aspen, that's not the case. You could probably leave your skis on the front lawn for a week and they'd be there when you got back.
So how hard was it to leave once you decided that you didn't like what was happening to you?
Totally hard. It's impossible. There's such a fright about leaving Aspen once you've been there so long, because you just know in many ways nothing is likely to be as exciting. Life was going to have... You're going to have to find some other compensations. But it was so much money to live there and stay there, and so much pressure in certain ways to dress well, to stay fit, to eat in a healthy way. I mean, all of these in a way are good things, but taken to extremes, they can be bad. And I enjoy having that pressure off now.
You know, we've talked a little bit about what crises of conscience it caused in you to be in a very upper-class, celebrity-oriented environment. Did you go through different kinds of crises of conscience when you were traveling with hobos or with illegal immigrants? Because, let's face it, you were from the middle class.
Definitely, definitely. With hobos in particular, by hobos I mean railroad hobos who travel on freight trains. And my aim was to learn what their life was like. But there was one thing which ensured that I would never really know. That is, I could learn a lot about it, but I would never be in the situation they're in of not being able to go home. And as a middle-class person, this is something I treasured is the ability to go home and have a door that locked and have a phone that rang and mail that arrived and comforts like that. I felt guilty about that when I was out there during my first couple months especially. Later on, I cherished those things in the same way I cherish my teeth. I started brushing my teeth sort of obsessively because I saw how all these older guys lost their teeth. And it was one of the things that made me distant from them, you know? They could see I had all my teeth. My teeth were straight, you know? They didn't know, but my teeth had been straightened. And it was one of those insurmountable barriers that at the beginning you may feel bad about, but later on you feel glad to have.
Well, Ted Conover, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
And Ted Conover is the author of the new book, Whiteout, Lost in Aspen, and it's based on 2 years that he spent living in Aspen. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.